This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome William Anthony Hay, Associate Director for Public Programs and Professor, School of Civic and Economic Thought and Leadership at Arizona State University, writing most recently of The History I Don't Know, which is the new thing in the world always. John Trumbull, born 1756, died November 1843, an American painter and much more, a window on not only the American Revolution, but the relationship between the colonies that become the United States of America and Great Britain, the British Empire. Will, thank you very much. I begin the scene with our protagonist, John Trumbull, the young man, attaching himself to Washington to watch the retreat of the British from Boston. At that time, who was he? What were his dreams? What were his father's dreams for him? Good evening, Will.
Good evening, John. John Trumbull was an ambitious young man from Lebanon, Connecticut, and he wanted to be a painter. His family didn't like that idea. They didn't see that as the best career. He'd gone to Harvard College, then Harvard College, and that was his father's plan, although his brother paid for it. Trumbull wanted to study art. And so back and forth on all of that. And he became a surveyor, a map maker, went back to Connecticut. And when the revolution began, Trumbull joined the Connecticut forces. He volunteered as a soldier and went to Boston, where he served under Washington. That's where he met Washington and saw the father of our country, commander of the Continental Army, firsthand.
The important detail here is that from a very young age, John Trumbull is limited in sight. He's disabled. We would say
yes.
He's functionally blind in two eyes. And that is not obviously the background of a fine painter. To my knowledge, I've never run into this before. Have you, Will?
No, I haven't. I mean, in many ways, John Trumbull as a great American painter is, or as a great painter even, take away the description of American. John Trumbull is an unlikely figure because he comes from a town in Connecticut, an area where, yes, there were pictures because art was the one way you could see yourself. But it was not a center of fine art. It was not an area of studying fine art. You had to go to Europe for that. And so Trumbull had to learn his trade and build a career against a lot of headwinds. And again, his family wasn't really keen on him doing this. He should go into law or teach or do something respectable in trade. That would be the New England, the Connecticut tradition. But going to war, serving with Washington, that introduced him to what became the subject of his life, painting the revolution.
He saw other aspects of the revolution. He was at Ticonderoga when they marched up there after Boston. He became alienated from the military. What was the falling out?
Well, that's an interesting question. Why did he leave the army? Someone who volunteered, an ardent patriot, the son of a patriot, Jonathan Trumbull, his father had been again, Connecticut's governor, the one governor who sided with Congress. Honor is the short answer of it. Honor, jealousy over a commission, that he was not promoted as he believed he deserved. John Adams complained, served in Congress. John Adams complained that many Continental officers that they fought over rank, the way apes fight over nuts was Adams's phrase. But your rank and the dating of your commission, that was part of your honor, that this was part of your status, and to be denied recognition was an affront to honor. Trumbull's commission, he didn't get the promotion he expected and felt he deserved. Not so much the promotion, but the date of the promotion. So others were more others who had done less were more senior to him. And so Trumbull resigned on what he saw as a point of honor and then went back to art, went back to painting.
Will introduces me to John Trumbull in the form of a book review of a new book by Richard Brookhiser, Glorious Lessons, John Trumbull, Painter of the American Revolution. Indeed he was, but he also lived a full life, and we're following his life because how do you become an historically significant painter in the late 18th century when your father has betrayed the British Empire by siding with the rascally Americans? Remember, the Patriots were less than a third of the colony. Another third of the colony were loyalists, the Tories, and the third in between goes back and forth all the time. So Trumbull followed a course, his father followed a course that was a minority position. And there was always fear of retribution by the British Empire. It didn't happen, but it could have. That tension, is it in his work? Do you see it, Will?
In Trumbull's work?
Yes.
It was a tension that Trumbull struggled with. Because to pursue his career, follow his craft, he had to go to England, or he had to go to Europe. And England was the logical place. His story captures the dilemmas of others. Benjamin West, who was George III's history painter, West was an American. John Singleton Copley, another American from Boston. In fact, a man that Trumbull had admired and had met as when he was a student in Boston. They pursued their careers in England. So the interesting part of Trumbull's story after he leaves the army is that he goes first to Paris and by way of Paris and then across the channel to England and see with an introduction to Benjamin West and to learn painting in London. So you have an American patriot, a continental officer who is now in an enemy capital. And that's a real conundrum for us today to see how people would have. Why would he do it? Why would they allow him to do it? It just doesn't add up to us. But at the time, it did.
The age of historical paintings at this point, we're talking about paintings that are huge with big scenes that are out of history. Was that monetizing at the time? Was there a great reward in painting those things?
Yes, there was a reward in painting. Part of the reward comes from lithographs, from engravings. Mm-hmm. So you have a painting, and we could go through some of the famous paintings that Trumbull made. And then it is the original, but then you'd have copies. Some would be painted copies, but you'd also have engravings of the paintings. Those engravings could be printed and then colored in, and then people could buy those at a much lower price. So you monetized your work not only by selling the original and selling a few painted copies, but by selling many more etchings, many more etchings or lithographs. And that becomes the way of doing this. So it would bring images alive to a much wider audience than just the original painting.
I think I've run into scenes that are part of this business. You would have openings and the huge crowds would show up and pay entry fees, I believe. It wasn't free. And it was a society attendance to the historical events. Of course, the king was in the painting. You better show up. But were there comparable events for American patriot scenes? That it's too early for that, isn't it?
Yes. In the 1770s, 1780s, yes. That comes later. Trumbull was very involved in setting up an American. In fact, he was president of the American Academy of the Arts. And I'm skipping ahead in the story, but his history paintings in the Capitol Rotunda, they were there as to provide lessons, why we fought, why we're here. So those were very much for public display.
But he wouldn't have done that in Britain. So what was he painting as he learned his craft? What were
If we go through his career, he painted a lot of portraits. There are some other scenes. The portraits fit into the big history paintings, too, because one thing that he did in order to paint, for example, the surrender at Saratoga or the surrender at Yorktown, Burgoyne at Saratoga, Cornwallis at Yorktown, you wanted to get an accurate rendition of the people there. So you had to sketch their faces, or at least do your best to get, and not do it from memory. So part of his professional life was drawing some of them as sketches, some of them became portraits, but capturing the people, some French officers, some British, Americans. And so he traveled all over to get the people who had been there at these key episodes and then represent them as best he could, as clearly as he could. This being accurate, the verity of and it gave viewers, elite and otherwise, a sense of you were there. This is what happened. So that's part of the power of art.
I think that one of his early paintings was Cincinnatus being called to duty by the Roman Senate.
Yeah.
Now, that's not exactly a disguised reference to Washington, is it? Was it greeted with huzzas in Britain?
Well, it was common. That you could get away with that. it was common to paint even contemporary scenes in classical dress. And scenes from Roman and, to a lesser degree, Greek antiquity, you would capture those images because that was the model that the ancient world, the world of classical antiquity, that was the ideal, because these were the people who made the great art, and these were many of the great figures. If you think about the curriculum of what people studied, not just in America or in Britain, they learned the Greek and Roman classics. So that was a world that was familiar. And it's interesting that presenting figures and scenes in modern dress, that was an 18th century innovation. That there's a famous painting by Benjamin West called The Death of General Wolfe, and it showed the British commander at Quebec, outside the walls of the city, dying at the moment of victory over the French. All those figures are presented in British uniforms, Indian dress, not dressed as Romans. George III said, well, you should dress Wolfe like a Roman because he had Roman courage and Roman heroism. The prestige was to follow the classical model. But West modernized it, and so that became a change, a turn, that other history painters picked up in depicting figures, not just painting a portrait of somebody who wanted to be commemorated, but scenes, presenting it in modern dress.
Our protagonist, John Trumbull, returns to America in 1789. And when we come back, the rest of the story. William Anthony Hay is Associate Director for Public Programs and Professor of School of Civic and Economic Thought and Leadership at Arizona State University, writing for Civitas Outlook for Civitas Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.